Good afternoon, everyone. Teaching each and Tom and then Toman. And that's it. I'm going to tell it in a row, bro.
So today's session is dedicated for question and answer session. But before we start the Q&A, I wanted to say a few words. Few weeks ago, His Holiness the Dalai Lama has confirmed that the reincarnation of Lama Sopa Rinpoche has reborn somewhere in Nepal. And in order for the kind of in order to succeed the proceedings to inviting the a new reincarnation, His Holiness advised his disciples to recite Jambal Senju, chanting the names of Manjushri and the short version of Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga, Miktsema. And I'm sure you all are reciting and doing that, carrying that prayers. So for the quick return of Rinpoche's reincarnation, there can be many prayers. We can recite many different prayers from sutras, from tantras, from and from many other. And among them, His Holiness advises to recite chanting the names of Manjushri and the short version of Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga. And it's really important for us to understand the significance of specifically choosing these two texts for the quick return of the reincarnation. So I think I might have shared this with you a few times, but in 2023 March, I had the opportunity to had a audience with Lama Sopa Rinpoche in Dharamshala. So during that time, Rinpoche told me that he wanted to kind of newly create or rather curated a new Thangka painting of the merit field of Lama Tsongkhapa Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga. And particularly the present Thangka that we have do not have a rather elaborated and detailed depiction of the Tushita heaven, where we invite the Guru in front of the merit field. And Rinpoche told me that in the new Thangka, we must depict the Tushita heaven in a very fine detailed manner. And that's what he shared with me.
Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga and Lama Tsongkhapa Yoga Ganden Lajama Yoga Ganden Lajama Thangati.
Generally speaking, as far as the merit field of Guru Yoga of Lama Tsongkhapa is concerned, there is the Guru Yoga from the Lama Tsongkhapa, and then there is the Guru Yoga of 100 deities of Tushita. And this kind of practice of doing the Guru Yoga Puja through the 100 deities of Tushita is a very kind of special kind of practice that Lama Sopa Rinpoche himself always does. And I've also shared this at the Chinese Institute that before his passing into Parinirvana, Lama Sopa Rinpoche visited the Tsum area in Nepal, and in one occasion he was reciting the Miktsema very loudly on a kind of hilltop. And this also probably is the last time, and reciting Miktsema Guru Yoga through Miktsema, the short version, is a very kind of sacred practice that Lama Sopa Rinpoche himself always undertakes. And that is the reason why His Holiness also advised us to recite Miktsema and the chanting the names of Manjushri for as a prayer for the quick return of his reincarnation.
대다 lāma sōpa rāmbu chēngi tā tukdōṅ gī nīmbu dī jāngwa lāma tsōṅ gāpa chēngbi dī lāmi nēn chō tā rēs.
The practice of Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga is also kind of considered very highly by Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche, and he himself really kind of focus on the practice of relying upon one's spiritual teacher or guru devotion. So guru devotion is the one of the most important practice that Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche undertakes. And we all know from his life that he had immense devotion and respect towards his own teachers, towards his own masters, as well as those who also have very strong guru devotion practice, even if they are not his teachers for that matter. And whenever he goes to kind of usually when he goes to airport and other places to receive his masters, he would immediately kind of do the long prostration at the airport itself, which is very rare for another kind of great lama. So it's probably only Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche who kind of exhibit such immense reverence and devotion at the public space. So from that, we can also understand the importance of guru devotion and how strong his practice of guru devotion is. So similarly, with deep faith and reverence, if you also say the prayers and recite the those prayers, the his unmistakable kind of reincarnation will be with us for soon.
Tēnī tā rōngu chīka ngāndēl tāñyādi ngāndēni gēshī kērā chēmbu tā āni chī tēndi kāyā mārēs.
And Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche also sent me here in Australia to teach here. And I'm not a very kind of, not a well-known kind of scholar, Geshe. Neither am I, there are many other kind of Geshes in Sera who are more qualified than me. And he can choose anybody to send here to teach. But the reason why Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche choose me to teach here is that he himself knew that my guru devotion was strong. I wholeheartedly served my teacher, and Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche clearly knows that, and that's the only reason why he recommend me to come here and teach.
Tēnī ngā chanda gyēwa lērā, chanda gyēwa, nidōng chūpshibhi chanda gyēwa lā, ōgas lē lēdi, rumbuchi chanda gōba lē phēsōngs.
I first came to Australia in August 2014, and in September 2014, Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche visited Chenrezig Institute in during the celebration of 40 years of Chenrezig Institute. And we went to the airport to receive Rinpoche, and on the way back to the center, we stopped at a one kind of location, Kapuche, I think. Yes, Kapuche. And then we had a break there and had tea. And during that moment, Lama Tsongkhapa Rinpoche told me that, well, you had the opportunity to serve your teacher for many years and even cleaning his urine and his entire thing. So it's very fortunate for you to have this opportunity for many years. For me, I had the only one time to clean the kind of urine of my teacher. I had only one moment, but for you, since you have served your teacher for multiple years, it's really extremely fortunate for you to have that opportunity. So that's what he remarked during that time.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you so much for that.
So that's what I wanted to share with you today, and now we can start with the questions.
Actually, just on that, with the Nyingsema Guru Yoga, is it just reciting the Nyingsema or the whole practice of the Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga with the Seven Wisdoms.
Of course, if you have enough time, it is better to recite the Guru Yoga with the complete kind of liturgy. But then sometimes if you do not have enough time, then it's also okay to do through the Mixima prayer. And if you recite the four-line Mixima prayer, that also encapsulates the entire Guru Yoga practice.
So a question from Suzanne. How do we help family members to stop overthinking things? How do we deal with anxiety? Where does it come from? And what can I do to help someone with anxiety?
Because I have one friend in Tasmania, Susan. I stayed there a couple of times. She's very kind.
So yes, we sometimes tend to overthink a lot, and such overthinking often led to unhappiness and so forth. So therefore, it's also crucial to remember that overthinking only begets unhappiness. So for instance, if I take myself as an example, I had to leave my country more than 38 years ago. And since then, I was living in a foreign country and another country, and I got separated from my family, from my relatives. And ever since, I never had the kind of fortune to reunited with them. And not only that, I'm also do not have kind of, you know, my own identity as a citizen of any kind of particular country. So if I kept thinking about all these, I have the basis for to have anxiety of being separated from my family, having no country, you know. So this is actually, I have an enough reason to feel kind of depressed or feel sad. And even after reaching in Australia, you know, here I do not have any family here, and I cannot speak in my mother tongue with anyone. So if I keep thinking about this, I have sufficient reason to feel overwhelmed and feel kind of sad. So regardless of the situation, and even after, you know, separating from the family and leaving the country after 38 years, I often try to think on the positive side. I often try to think on the bright side. And when I do so, I find many reasons to be happy and to rejoice. And when I think about being separated from my country, when I first had to leave the country, and when I met to India safely, instead of focusing on the hardship, I try to focus on the positive side of being safely made to India. And not only that, after reaching India, I had the fortune to see His Holiness, receive teachings from His Holiness, and then joined Seraji to study with thousands of monks, engaged in the rigorous studies of Buddhist philosophy. And not only that, I had the fortune to study under many highly realized masters. And when I think about the bright side, the positive side, I often feel joyful and rejoice about the opportunities I have. And this keeps me happy and joyful. And not only that, although I have nothing to offer to my masters, but they really cared for me, and they really look after me very well. And I had the fortune to kind of study under their and nurture under their care. And when I think about these sides, I often find reasons to be happy and to be joyful. And not only that, when I first reach Genesic Institute, I do not speak a word of English. And the only person I can kind of communicate is with my translator. And if he's not there, then I cannot speak in my mother tongue with anybody. And during that time, I even don't know the meaning of hello. So if somebody says hello, I have no clue what they are saying. So if I think about, the difficult side, the negative side of often I might, there is a tendency to feel sad and lonely, but I often try to feel, think about the positive side, and if that's helped me keep happy and joyful.
Tirda ta nami yongin ji bai no gawappe mong kome yorasra.
And moreover, if you have a family, and of course there are more reasons for you to be happy. And for those who do not have a family, they have nobody to share your joy, share your sadness. They have nobody to share your feelings, and so on and so forth. And if you have a family, you have the family to kind of share ups and downs. And if you are able to think about the positive side of a family, you will find more reasons to be happy. And usually we think, family life is a big problem because we tend to focus more on the shortcoming side and the negative side. And instead of focusing on the negative side, if we choose to focus and think about the positive side of the family more, and we will definitely find more reasons to be happy and joyful. So when we talk about happiness or unhappiness, of course, it is a state of mind. It is an emotional state of mind. Happiness and joyful or unhappiness does not come from external things, and they are not external things. Happiness is a state of mind. It is an emotional state of mind. And since happiness and unhappiness is a state of mind, we must achieve these from from our own mind. So therefore, if our perception is more positive, if you try to focus more on the bright side, the positive side, obviously we will become more happy. And if we tend to always focus on the negative side, then this will lead to unhappiness and sadness, and so on and so forth. So therefore, it's really crucial for us to shift our focus from negative side to the positive side. There is always a positive side to think about, and it's really crucial for us to focus more on the positive side. And if we could do that, our short life will we could kind of leave this short life very happily without any kind of disturbances. So therefore, it's really crucial to shift our focus from negative side to the positive side.
Just in relation to what you were saying then, we have this saying in Australia, don't be an ostrich and have your head in the sand, like don't be ignorant of what's going on around you. And sometimes I find it difficult to know where the fine line is between being ignorant of things around you, but also like maybe turning off from the news and all of these negative things that can like put us in a negative frame of mind. How to be aware of things going around you, but not get caught up in the negativity? Do we just turn everything off, or do we like, how do we do that? How do we negotiate that?
Chitang tangi dilen tada rewen mishi da zhruwa kyalan ki sangyur ta yagbu yorada sangyur kashi ta yagbu pe yorada ngunni tani nguyo ni tsuki ani sangyur kubu yorada
So although sometimes we of course we see good news being broadcast in the TV channels, but most of the cases we tend to see what we see in the news, what we see in the TV is not very welcoming, because many politicians, they use the platform to spread the propaganda. And if somebody wanted to defame somebody, they may also use this platform to do so. And not only that, sometimes even though the actual scenario is not that much, kind of big, but sometimes people tend to exaggerate and broadcast that in the news. So therefore, we tend to see many unwelcoming kind of news in the TV. For instance, in 2011, His Holiness the Dalai Lama decided to step down from his political the role of the political head of the Tibetan people. He fully retired on his political responsibility in 2011, and he kind of shifted the power to the elected leader in exile community. And during that time, we had the election held to choose the next political heir to His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And during the campaign and the election process, I've seen that many people also spread false and baseless allegations to the candidate that they don't like. For instance, if they do not like one kind of candidate, so what they spread about, what they say about that particular candidate is mostly inaccurate. So the 85, more than 85% of what we hear in the news about that person is baseless allegations. So therefore, if we rely too much on the TV and the news that we see, it will only lead to downfall and unreliable information.
Ta ngazu ta chö chö pigi ta namba san gi bi ta chö chingi ji ngwen ni she ba na
Regardless of what we see in the news, what we hear, and whatever the situation outside, it's kind of really important for us as individuals to guard our body, speech, and mind. And we could do so by engaging in the studies of sutras and tantras, and of course, and other writings of great Indian scholars and Lama Tsongkhapa. And then, if we kind of master the text, the teachings, then we will be equipped to deal with such negative things that we encounter. So, if we study well, then we will be equipped to distinguish what is truth, what is false, and it will also help us to not only distinguish the true and false, but also remain unaffected by the external turbulence. So therefore, it is really important to equip ourselves with the kind of mental armor so that we remain unaffected with the external negative news.
If you are doing 110,000 recitations, when you complete that number, should you continue a daily amount ongoing, or does it end when you complete this amount?
With regard to this question, it's crucial to remember the purpose of doing the recitation, and the whole purpose of the recitation and engaging in such similar practice is really to cleanse our mental, cleanse our mind. By doing limited recitation, if you feel that you have served the purpose of cleaning your mind, then you could consider that the recitation is completed or sufficient. And even if you do more than that, if your mind is still the same, then you should do more recitation.
Never ending.
Hi, Geshe-la. I've been thinking about beginningless time recently. I've heard teachers talk about the word, they use the word since beginningless time or from beginningless time. And in my mind, it's antithetical to the word beginningless. And I guess I'm struggling to I would like to a way of thinking of beginningless time. I guess I'm wondering if you can give any advice on that.
So the question is, what is the way of thinking about what beginningless time, right?
Hello. How to think of beginningless time? The word since and the word from is antithetical to beginningless.
Tē tōngu mē bā rā sī rā bā. Tē kār tē tīwa tī chīk tsōr sā yā.
If you try to kind of relate this term with regard to how do we understand the composition of material things that we see, And when we analyze the material things, they are of course composed of more smaller parts, and even these smaller parts are further segregated. They are again composed of even smaller particles and smaller particles and even smaller particles. And then if we try to analyze in this manner, we do not find a kind of finest fundamental thing that that particular thing started from that time. So we could not pinpoint the starting point of that particular subtle particle. So in that context, sometimes we also use the term beginningless.
근데 lūsāṃ yīla jāyāṃ tā, lū tōni sāṃdāna lūdī tār tūna dūchāṃ chāṃ
If you try to understand this term from the point of view of our body and mind, our body is composed of cells, of course the cells, they came from its own previous kind of origin or cause. Then if you try to kind of analyze in this manner, we could not pinpoint the first kind of substantial cause for that cell or for our physical body. We can't really pinpoint. So in that context, we say it's came from beginningless time. And similarly, the mind of this life, it is believed to be entered during the period of the conception, when we are conceived. During that time, the consciousness enters, and if we were to pinpoint the previous moment of that consciousness, it may come from the previous life. And then if we were to search in this manner, we can't really pinpoint the exact first moment of that consciousness. So in that context also, we say consciousness is also beginningless.
What are the four Mahayana wheels?
What are the four Mahayana wheels? What's the Tibetan equivalent for the wheels here? Thikchingi takhasa wheels na jidan korlo do sigar di karla sigina ke Thikchingi korlo shis na ane da di lama chupi gen juk dwa jila tindre ki chigiro ge thik
Kyo temas? Nga temas te?
May I never be separate from the four wheels on. Usually the you know the sometimes when we talk about the four wheels, it could refer to the wheel of engaging in studies, listening and hearing, then the wheel of practice, and then engaging in the wheel of serving the Sangha community, and so on and so forth.
Tösum gonsum ki ta kolosum zeti. Tigala çağlayı ki kolosu cevarda diriyesi ruha.
And then when we talk about the wheel of listening, contemplation, and meditation, and sometimes the serving the Sangha communities is also aided and make it four. And then here the distinction between Mahayana or Hinayana is only distinguished in terms of the strength of the meditation.
I've looked this up before, and as far as I can tell, it's access to holy beings, supportive family and sangha, resources to allow you to study, and also rituals and pujas.
Himalaya di yung dalaya ane kolosis laundi.
So I think, as far as the four wheels are concerned, I think different scholars have different way of interpreting this, and we can either a kind of a list, like what you have just mentioned, or usually when we count the four wheels, first we'll count the wheel of listening or hearing the Dharma, and then secondly the contemplation, and third meditation, and on top of that sometimes we also put serving the community, we can also align these with the Lama Tsongkhapa's life, where he summarizes his life by saying that first I engage in rigorous studies, Secondly, I saw all the teaching as personal instructions. And thirdly, I practiced day and night, and I dedicated for the well-being of entire sentient beings. So with regard to these four lines, we could also interpret the four wheels as well. Yes. So in the actual word of Lama Chöpa, it reads Tekcho, which means may I never being separated from the four Mahayana wheels. So here immediately it says it comes the list of bodhicitta, renunciation, correct view, and two stages. But here it's important to remember that the four lists are not to be kind of counted as the four Mahayana wheels. So first, four Mahayana wheels is separate. On top of that, may I be able to practice renunciation, bodhicitta, correct view, and so on and so forth. So sh we should interpret in that way, not to count the renunciation, bodhicitta, correct view, two stages as the four wheels.
Thank you, Keshava. This is a question around the cultivation of bodhicitta. I know you've taught on this topic to us before, but I'm now going and reading Labyrinth texts, and I've come up to this topic again. The question really is, what would you recommend as a daily practice to help cultivate bodhicitta?
Tadipi yaporesi tarwa. Tan lamrum loya tita. Tan gwane tani ta yapo shiores. Tan ngarangi. Tan mese besa tan kiwi kore ta.
So first of all, I'm really happy to hear that you are reading and studying Lamrim. I've spent most of my time also studying Lamrim, and I received teachings from His Holiness and many other great teachers. So what I understand from their teachings, Lamrim is one of the most profound and kind of profound and sacred kind of practice that we could adopt. I rejoice for what you're doing. So usually when we talk about bodhicitta is said to be a mind which is conjoined with the two aspirations, the causal aspiration and the concomitant aspiration. The causal aspiration of bodhicitta is the great compassion, and the concomitant aspiration is the kind of aspiration to attain complete enlightenment for the benefit of entire sentient being.
Sanje komba karchen zao nyin chembu shu chembu kiundi sanje komba ten ni nomba ti karchen nyin ji changi yore sadi te chhore no ro te nengares.
So as I mentioned earlier, the causal kind of aspiration of bodhicitta is the great compassion, and sometimes it's also known by the name immaculate kind of resolution. So when we talk about great compassion, it is the mind that sees the that aspire for all sentient beings to be freed from the suffering, and the practitioner himself or herself kind of committed to shoulder upon the responsibility of freeing the sentient beings from the suffering. And that is the mind of great compassion. And now when you see that sentient beings are suffering and they need to be freed from this suffering, from bondage of the suffering, and when you analyze if you have the potential to do so, then you realize your current status, you do not have the potential to free other sentient beings from the suffering. And now, who has the potential to free other sentient beings? Then you realize Buddhas have the potential to free the sentient beings from the suffering. And then once you realize that Buddhahood has the potential to free other sentient beings from the suffering, then you committed yourself to attain complete Buddhahood, only to free other sentient beings from the suffering. And Therefore, whenever you read Lamrim, you often see lots of descriptions about the exalted qualities of the Buddha. That is meant to make you realize that the Buddha has the potential to save or rather protect other sentient beings from the suffering. Then on the other hand, you'll see a lot of description about the suffering of sentient beings, many different levels of sufferings you will encounter when you read Lamrim. And that is, you know, meant to make you understand that the sentient beings are really, you know, suffering from different levels of suffering. So the more you understand that the sentient beings are suffering, and the more you understand that the Buddhas have the potential to save others from the suffering, then there is no way but to commit yourself, make you compelled to engage in the practice of bodhicitta. So this realization will make you kind of cultivate bodhicitta. There are no separate kind of practice that will help you to cultivate bodhicitta, but the most effective way is first you to familiarize yourself with the different sufferings that sentient beings are facing and the exalted qualities of the Buddhas that they possess to save sentient beings from the suffering.
Tira da lamrum lamrum du sulongdi ani chi sangye yobatyang lamrum long na hakobresta.
And similarly, if you read Lamrim, you will also realize the possibility of attaining complete Buddhahood, or the possibility of the state of the Buddhahood. And not only that, you will also get to know the means of attaining the state of Buddhahood. Through this, we will understand first the possibility of the Buddhahood, and then the possibility of the different means or the practices that which leads us to the state of Buddhahood. And then if you read Lamrim, you'll also kind of understand not only the possibility of the concept of Buddha in general, but you'll also realize the possibility of the individual practitioner becoming a Buddha. So not only that, not only he talks about the possibility of yourself becoming a Buddha, it also talks about the different paths, different practices which leads the individual practitioner to that state. And then if you engage in the practice accordingly, then of course we will attain the Buddhahood. And Lamrim also talks about the practices for the individual practitioner state of ordinary until you attain the complete enlightenment. So all these are really taught in the Lamrim. We all do not want suffering, but sometimes we fail to recognize subtle suffering. So therefore, if we read Lamrim, it will help us to recognize not only the gross levels of the suffering, but also the subtle levels of the suffering as well, and the sufferings that we may encounter in the future life as well. So Lamrim will help us to understand the different levels, different subtleties of the suffering that we do not want. And not only that, Lamrim also teaches us the potential causes which give rise to such sufferings. And therefore, if we kind of truly immerse ourselves in the studies of the Lamrim, and the more we deepen our understanding of the different levels of suffering and the means of overcoming that, such realization will definitely lead to the cultivation of a great compassion. So together with studying and reading the Lamrim, it is equally important to do the guru yoga practice of Lama Tsongkhapa, who is the composer of the Lamrim text. So on a daily basis, you know, it's if you could make offerings, of course it's recommended to the best of your ability. Then even if you are could only offer an incense, that's also sufficient if you do so with pure motivation. And then with that, with the permit of your time, if you could recite either the longer version or the shorter version of the Guru Yoga of Lama Tsongkhapa, and then make prayer that may I you know, become someone like you, make prayer in this way, and then together with the Guru Yoga practice, then if you engage yourself in the Lamrim studies, then we don't need any other greater practice than this. So therefore, if you could do this practice on the daily basis, then of course the shorter version of the prayer will not take much time. And then with this, if you could recite or do the practice on the daily basis, then together with the practice, you will kind of somehow feel very close to Lama Tsongkhapa. And the more you feel close to the Lama Tsongkhapa, and then reading his text will also become more effective, and they somehow the advices that we find in his writings will become more effective.
If you don't have direct access, physical access to your Vajra masters, and you've been practicing Action Tantra for some time, are there specific signs you should look for to tell you that you're on the right track before you even go near high silver tantra?
Tawad ye tan jowat chun tsangwe gil yudin kebar chen chik tob yobay na ani sangha doji tibi lamna jubi gita tudres.
And particularly as far as the practice of Vajrayana is concerned, the physical, the human body that we have is considered as the most suitable basis for the practice of Vajrayana. And now, not only we have attained the Prajnaswarmya rebirth, but we are also endowed with the kind of fortunate facilities of we have interest to Buddha Dharma, we have the opportunity to practice the Dharma, and we have also encounter with kind of qualified masters. So when we when all these conditions are met, then we must kind of motivate ourselves to engage in the practice of Highest Yoga Tantra, and we can't kind of wait for somebody to tell us to, you know, practice Vajrayana. So this is not how it goes. And when all the conditions are met, then we must consider the accurate time to engage in the practice. And usually we say that there are more than 8 billion human beings on this earth. And in some places, let alone having teachers to teach the Dharma, there are not even a kind of page of Dharma to be seen. So for them, it's, you know, it's, they are deprived of the opportunity to practice Dharma. But as far as we are concerned, we have all the facilities we need to practice. We have such a wonderful center, Dharma center, and we have regular kind of Dharma classes. We have teachers to teach Dharma, and we also can dedicate time to practice and study. So when all these conditions are met, now we must kind of motivate and commit ourselves in the practice, and we can't effort any delay when all conditions are met, because in the next life when we die, we're not very sure where we will go.
You mentioned three studies. Today I learned something new from you. Lamrim. Higher Sugar Tantra, if I'm pronouncing it correct, and Vajrayana. Three things today I learned new. And I'm thinking of these people in remote areas of life, in the villages and farms. Do they do such activities unknowingly? They don't know that they are doing this in life, like in a farm, or they're going bringing water from the river or something. Is there such activities that they do unknowingly that matches these three studies, but they don't know that they are doing it?
Where are you from?
Armenia.
Namjung also the Rimba Mongwear, the Rimba Tangu di and Mugichubung Sudum Sway there is.
So generally speaking, when we talk about the practice, it has of course many different stages, many different levels. And the foundational practice for Buddhism is the abstinence from the 10 non-virtuous actions. And I think those people who live in remote areas and lead a very simple and pure life, they may be kind of practicing this foundational practice, regardless of whether they know the terms, whether they're familiar with the kind of jargons or not. But apart from that, the entire practice of Bodhidharma could be, I mean, it's difficult to say the complete, the practice, all the complete practice in such conditions.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Geshe-la, for us being able to put you on your toes for the answers. And thank you, everyone, for your questions. And in particular, thank you very much for Donna for lightning fingers there, being like the ersatz interpreter as well. And of course, thank you, Thupten, for being such a fantastic interpreter.